At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi there, my name's Aaron Matek.
And I'm Katie Halper.
And we are Useful Idiots, the irreverent politics podcast calling out corporate politicians and their media stenographers.
Here, no one is safe from our ridicule. A wise journalist once said that all news can fit into the four basic food groups of news.
The four food groups are Democrats suck, Republicans suck, isn't that weird, and isn't that terrible. Each week, we deep dive on one news story from each category, covering the 2024 election, America's endless proxy wars, and so much more.
Plus, we host weekly interviews with politicians, journalists, writers, rock stars, comedians, and more.
Past guests include Noam Chomsky, Roger Waters, Abby Martin, Noor Erekat, Oliver Stone, Bernie Sanders, and David Cross.
So ditch corporate media and learn what's really going on in the world with Useful Idiots. New episodes drop every Friday wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, August 28th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we are going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been up to. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
All right, Brad, let's get into it. What have you been doing recently?
Oh, a little of this, a little of that. I've been trying to pack up my life to move across the country, and then the universe decided, hey, guess what? Fuck your plans. We're going to mess them up real bad.
Okay, so what does that mean?
So I'm no longer moving to Texas. To make a long story short, there's just weird things happening at an upper level in what's happening with my fiance's job. And there's just no reason for me to go down there because she's not going to stay down there and she's going to take advantage of another opportunity elsewhere. We're still in the midst of figuring out where exactly that is, but the good news is she's got good prospects and it'll definitely take us somewhere. It could be close to where I already am or it could be further away, definitely not Texas this time. So I'll definitely provide an update when I have a better idea of what's happening. In the meantime, I'm still packing and I hate my life.
All those Legos coming back to bite you?
Oh, I haven't even started the Legos yet, man, because here's the thing. I keep getting new
ones. And so, oh, no.
And I have to build them because I have to review them, so they can't just sit there. So like what I'm going to end up having to do probably is the bigger ones at some point, I'm going to have to like take probably a weekend, if not more, to just start taking apart the bigger ones that I know if I tried to pack would just fall apart and would be extremely hard to piece back together if they did fall apart. Mm-hmm. So like just like the modular buildings and like stuff like that, I'm probably just going to disassemble and like put them into numbered bags so that when I have the opportunity, I can just like basically just have fun and rebuild them again. So that'll be nice, I guess. But yeah, I definitely have a lot of things still packed, that I'm still packing up, and I keep getting more stuff too, you know, because like I get books and I get movies and things. It's just like fucking hell.
Yes, first world problems for sure.
It really is. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining about the free things that I get. It's the packing of the things later that is the problem.
Yeah. Okay. So speaking of books, tell me what you've been reading recently.
Yeah, so we'll dive into this more extensively in September, but I have been reading a book that's coming out at the very beginning of October called Best Possible Time, Worst Possible Place by filmmaker and cinematographer Barry Sonnenfeld. If you don't remember Barry Sonnenfeld by name, he directed the two live-action Addams Family movies. He directed all three of the Men in Black movies. He also worked with the Coen brothers on a couple movies like Misery and Blood Simple as their cinematographer. And one thing I did not know about Barry Sonnenfeld is that he is incredibly funny. And he has some amazing anecdotes from the time that he has spent in Hollywood. He actually has another book out there that covers a few of his other earlier projects like Big and whatnot called Barry Sonnenfeld, Call Your Mother. And I haven't read that one yet, but funnily enough, before I learned about this book, I spotted it at a used bookstore and looked at it and I bought it, but I just haven't read it yet. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. So we'll talk more about this book when the time comes, because we're actually I'm also going to be interviewing Barry Sonnenfeld tied to the release of the book. So stick around for that sometime closer to the end of September.
Very cool. I'm very excited about that. I'm excited to hear that conversation, especially knowing your reaction to how funny he is. So sometimes people could be a little dry, but it sounds like that's not the case with him. So I'm excited to hear what you guys get into. Okay, let's get into what we've been watching. I watched a movie called The Name of the Rose that came out in 1986, and it is based on Umberto Eco's novel of the same name, which I have not read. The story is set in the 1300s at this isolated abbey in northern Italy, and a friar played by Sean Connery gets called in to solve a murder that happened there. And he is a real Sherlock Holmes type, where he's able to deduce things from tiny details that nobody else notices. And the Watson figure in this story is this teenage boy that is played by a very young Christian Slater. And the boy is basically the friar's novice. He's like a squire type of figure where he's sort of learning how to be a monk or a friar or whatever by following this guy around. He's kind of the audience surrogate where he like asks a lot of questions and allows characters around him to explain things in an organic way. So once these guys get to this abbey and start investigating the murder, several other murders start to happen. So that's pretty fun. Some of the monks start to believe that a devil is at work in this place. And Sean Connery is basically like rolling his eyes and saying there has to be a rational explanation for this. So I thought this movie was pretty enjoyable. It has a really cool, unique setting. Lots of people wandering through hallways and libraries with secrets and stuff like that. I thought the mystery and the ultimate conclusion were mostly pretty satisfying. My wife read the book before we watched this movie. And while she said that it was kind of a tough read because the author really seems to delight in writing scenes where characters argue about minutiae of religious doctrine, which I guess can be kind of tough to read, there were several differences that she pointed out where the book either sort of like doled out information in a more interesting way than the movie did, or focused on cool elements that the film barely touched on, or sometimes like skipped entirely. So if the general story here sounds interesting to you, anecdotally, it sounds like the book might be the better version of it. But as somebody who doesn't have any plans to actually read the book, I thought that watching the movie version of The Name of the Rose was an entertaining substitute. So that's streaming on Prime Video right now. Have you ever heard of that movie, Brad?
I have not.
Drew Struzan did the poster. So maybe you've seen the poster floating around. So that's pretty cool. But all right. I also watched a documentary called Long Shot that came out in 2017. This is not to be confused with the Seth Rogen, Charlize Theron sort of a modern rom-com that came out, I think, a couple years after that. Have you ever seen this doc, this Long Shot doc? Do you know the story at all?
I don't think so.
So it tells the story of this guy named Juan Catalan, who was arrested for murdering a 16-year-old girl in Los Angeles in 2003. He matched the appearance of a composite drawing that was informed by a witness, and he was facing life in prison, but he didn't actually commit the crime. And he said he was at a Dodgers baseball game the night of the murder with his young daughter, and Juan's lawyer combed through footage of the game's broadcast and like the Jumbotron camera footage and all of that, and just desperately was trying to put his client at that game. And he had no luck with that until something unexpected occurred. And there happened to be a TV show filming at the game that night. And I'm not going to say what the show is in case people aren't familiar with the story and haven't heard the details, but suffice it to say, it is wild what happens. And the doc is only 40 minutes long, so it's not a huge time commitment if you're interested in checking it out. I will say that my biggest takeaway from this whole thing is to feel completely heartbroken and furious at the way that our society is set up and how you or me or any of our listeners could easily be the next Juan, an innocent person who is like the subject of an eager and arrogant prosecutor, basically just deciding that somebody is guilty and utilizing all the power that they wield to convince people that they're right. It is just like really infuriating. And although Longshot tells a story where there's this incredible coincidence that happens, so many other people are in the wrong place in the wrong time and are just powerless to adequately fight back. And they just don't have this amazing coincidence to sort of back their own reality and prove that they're innocent in this scenario. So anyway, it's really a very impressive documentary. It's very short, streaming on Netflix right now. It's really well done and it has some very entertaining moments in it. It's called Long Shot. So I would encourage people to check that out if you're interested. And the last thing I wanted to mention is I've been watching Girls 5 Eva. Have you seen this show, Brad?
I have seen the first season and a few episodes of the second season, and it is okay. It is hilarious.
Yeah, that's about where I am. I think I'm 5 episodes into season 2 right now. And I agree. It's a really, really funny show. It kind of seems like because the cast is a little bit less sprawling than something like The Office or Parks and Rec or Brooklyn Nine-Nine, the bench isn't quite as deep as those shows, so it feels a little bit more
or even 30 Rock, which has like a similar tone.
Right. Yeah. And I've seen like a couple seasons, like a couple of the later seasons of 30 Rock, but I need to do like a full viewing of that show.
Watched 30 Rock in its entirety?
No, I haven't.
Oh man, dude, it's like jokes per minute, one of the funniest shows ever on television. The only show I think that matches how fast and furious jokes come, where like you have to keep up with punchlines, is the first 3 seasons of Arrested Development.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's I mean, 30 Rock has been on my list for a long time. I just need to get around to checking it out. But yeah, I would say from what I've seen of 30 Rock, Girls 5 Eva is not quite to that level in terms of like the ferocity and the velocity of the jokes.
Yeah.
But it's still really entertaining and I love the characters and I love spending time with them. And they have some really great fake songs that they come up with for the episodes of the show. The basic pitch, if you haven't heard of it, is that it's about this group of like middle-aged women who used to be a part of a girl group back in the late 90s and early 2000s, and they have a career resurgence, basically, that one of the I think a rapper samples their only hit song, I think, and then they sort of get back together because there's like a little bit of an appetite for them in the modern context, so they become pop stars again. And some of them had regular jobs, one of them was a dentist and stuff like that. And so it's just about these women who come together after spending years together and then years apart, and then coming back together at different stages of their lives. And I'm kind of shocked because Sarah Bareilles, the singer, she plays like essentially the lead character of this show. And I think she's really, really good. I haven't seen her in anything else. I know that she's been in like at least one Apple TV Plus show. And I think she's worked on some Broadway stuff before. But I'm kind of like bowled over by her as an actress. I mean, she's not the next Meryl Streep or anything, but for somebody who is primarily a pop star, I was like very, very impressed with her. So
yeah, I had no idea that she was that good either, because she's very, very funny in the show.
Yeah, I just wanted to shout her out. Is there any particular aspect of Girls 5 Eva that stands out to you, Brad?
You know, I was just surprised at how much I liked the ensemble being, you know, since there's not really like a huge star among them, you know, like it's not like where you have 30 Rock and you have like Tina Fey leading the charge, and someone like Alec Baldwin and Tracy Morgan among the supporting cast. You know, it's a pretty low key cast when you think about it, but they all jive together really well. And I love that Paula Pell has been given like a key role in a series like this, because she is just brilliant and hilarious, and
she's so funny.
Yeah, and I love having her like in a key role like this, as opposed to just popping up every now and then like she does in a lot of other comedy shows.
Absolutely. Okay, let's take a break and then we'll come back and get into what Brad's been watching.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi there, my name's Aaron Matek.
And I'm Katie Halper.
And we are Useful Idiots, the irreverent politics podcast calling out corporate politicians and their media stenographers.
Here, no one is safe from our ridicule. A wise journalist once said that all news can fit into the four basic food groups of news.
The four food groups are Democrats suck, Republicans suck, isn't that weird, and isn't that terrible. Each week, we deep dive on one news story from each category, covering the 2024 election, America's endless proxy wars, and so much more.
Plus, we host weekly interviews with politicians, journalists, writers, rock stars, comedians, and more.
Past guests include Noam Chomsky, Roger Waters, Abby Martin, Noor Erekat, Oliver Stone, Bernie Sanders, and David Cross.
So ditch corporate media and learn what's really going on in the world with Useful Idiots. New episodes drop every Friday wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Brad, what have you been checking out recently?
Okay, so I dug into some classic movies, been trying to take a cue from the old Ben playbook and dig into some older movies. So I watched The Maltese Falcon, a movie that I had never seen before, even though I was very much aware of its, you know, place in cinematic history and, you know, the pop culture allusions to, like, what The Maltese Falcon is and all that jazz. And the thing is, like, it's exactly what I thought this movie was going to be. You know, it is just a classic film noir with all the staples you want from that kind of movie. A fantastic performance by Humphrey Bogart. Funnily enough, because of my, like, blindness with certain classic movies, I haven't really experienced Peter Lorre much outside of him being parodied in Looney Tunes. Mm-hmm. So actually seeing him in this movie, it's like I immediately was like, oh, Peter Lorre. But yeah, this movie is just it's fantastic. It's got a great mystery. It doesn't overstay its welcome. You know, it has that tight runtime that you like that a lot of classic movies have. And yeah, man, there's a reason it's a certified classic because it's brilliant.
It's so good. I'm glad that you finally got around to that one. I would recommend The Big Sleep next if you're...
I've seen The Big Sleep, actually, and yeah, okay, that movie cool. is fantastic, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Peter Lorre, like, when was the last time you watched Casablanca, Brad?
Oh, gosh, I don't think I've seen it since college, probably.
Yeah, I've rewatched it a couple times over the past three or four years or so, and it's, like, very slowly becoming one of my all-time favorites. I mean, that's not, like, a hot take or anything, but Peter Lorre is so good in that movie, and just the dynamic that he has with Bogart. Like, I would just say, if you're looking for anything, if you find yourself on one of those nights where you're just, like, scrolling around, like, what do I watch? I'm not really feeling anything. Throw on Casablanca, because there's no way it's going to be a bad decision. So,
okay,
what else have you been watching?
I also watched the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the one from 1956.
I haven't seen any of these adaptations of the story at all.
I actually haven't seen any of the other ones either, and I kind of just figured I would start with this one. And it's a breeze, too, because it's only an hour and 20 minutes long. It's directed by Don Siegel. It stars Kevin McCarthy and Dana Winter. And you know the classic story. It's, you know, it's a town, and people are acting strange. Other people are like, no, this person is not like who I think they are. It's all pretty straightforward, and they discover that there's these pods that are being used to grow new versions of people that kind of just live in this pretty bland utopian version of society where they're pretty much exactly like the people that they're taking over, except no emotions, no conflict, anything like that. And so Kevin McCarthy and Dana Winter play this pair who like used to have a thing and now they're not, and they're kind of friends. And they become privy to what's happening, and then they try to escape it, and lots of suspense. This has a great classic film score by a composer named Carmen Dragon, an amazing name for a film composer. But it's like that classic thing where just like big strings and big horns for like the suspenseful moments and like the shocking turns and everything. But yeah, it's very short. I do the ending feels like it kind of fizzles out in a way, because I was expecting like, and this is probably just my contemporary movie sensibilities coming into play, but I was expecting like one final twist in this movie, because it's the way it's set up is it's bookended by Kevin McCarthy's character recounting to a hospital, like a cop and a psychiatrist, like what he's experienced. And of course they're like skeptical, and the whole movie is him telling the story. And then it ends with him, you know, not being believed, until they get like details that there's something happening outside that like confirms what he just said. But then it ends before they like do anything to resolve it. It's just the confirmation that he was right. And so like there's it's just like, oh, that's it, I guess.
Yeah, I found that especially for movies from like the 30s, 40s, and 50s, they just end. There's like that's such a common thing in my experience of watching these movies recently is just like, yeah, I think a lot of we were kind of trained to expect like a big climax and then like 10 more minutes of descending action. And then, yeah, like you said, maybe one final twist squeezed in there or something like that. And it's really like the end of the main narrative and the end of the, you know, everything just sort of comes to a head and then like roll credits as fast as possible, basically.
Yeah. So yeah, so that was it for the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I'll probably watch the one with Donald Sutherland sometime here soon too.
Yeah, this is great. I'm going to add this to my list. Do you remember where you watched this? Was it streaming somewhere?
It's on Amazon Prime.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
All right, speaking of Amazon Prime, you watched a Prime Video original, right?
Indeed, I did. I watched Paul Feig's latest movie, Jackpot, with an exclamation point. It stars John Cena and Awkwafina, and it's basically an action comedy take on The Purge meets The Lottery, in a way. So the story takes place in like a little bit further ahead in the future where the California lottery has become this thing where when the winner is chosen, you get a huge sum of money if you survive for 24 hours, basically. And so if you do that, you get the multi-billion dollar jackpot, but you're constantly having your location broadcast every now and then to everybody else in the area who can try to kill you. And if they kill you, they get the jackpot.
So wait, does that person who kills you then become hunted in that 24-hour period? Is it like a free-for-all, or is it like the first person to kill you gets it and that's it?
The first person to kill you gets it.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. And so this movie is fun to an extent, but I had a really hard time accepting the world in which it exists because they don't do much to differentiate this version of California from current day California. And like that's kind of the idea because it's supposed to be like a thing where like, oh yeah, this could realistically just become a thing, you know, kind of similar to what they did with The Purge. It's like it doesn't really take place in a distant future. It's just kind of a somewhat alternate future. But like, I feel like this kind of a concept needed a world that felt at least somewhat different from our own to feel a little more believable. And because of the action comedy tone, the stakes don't necessarily feel all that engaging in the movie. So like I liked aspects of it. There's a really fun running gag with John Cena's character who he runs his own company where he hires out his services as a bodyguard for lottery winners. And he gets like a percentage of the lottery if they survive.
Okay, and, smart.
And so he takes it upon himself to start helping Awkwafina when she accidentally ends up in the lottery. There's a funny running bit involving the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. and I really like that, but it just kind of felt out of place with everything else. And so like there's interesting elements here, and I just don't ever feel like they coalesced into something that was like stylized or captivating enough to like justify its existence. Like I like Paul Feig as a comedy director, and he's done some decent stuff with bigger genre style things like Spy, but like for this I almost would have preferred a director that has a more distinct visual style and a better eye for like how to shoot action in a dynamic way, like maybe someone like Edgar Wright or something like that. Because it just felt kind of flat to me, and the world felt kind of boring, even though they try to keep ramping up the excitement with the action sequences. And plus I don't love Awkwafina as a lead. I think she's fine in small doses, but I think she works best as a supporting character. So
Yeah, I know that this one didn't do particularly well with critics, but I think it's like a big hit on Prime Video. So Jackpot is the name of the movie.
And you know, Sean William Scott has a small part in it in the very beginning of the movie. And you know what? I think we need a return for Sean William Scott. I think he deserves it.
Scott-a-sance, bring it on. Let's do it. Okay, what else have you been watching?
I also watched Adam Sandler's new Netflix special, Adam Sandler Love You. It's on Netflix now. It is directed by one of the Safdie brothers, Josh Safdie, who is the one who didn't appear in Oppenheimer. He directed Uncut Gems along with his brother that Adam Sandler started and is fantastic. And if you liked 100% Fresh, which is Adam Sandler's comedy special that he did back in 2018, you will definitely enjoy this. It is another great comedy special with Adam Sandler's mix of stand-up bits and funny songs and just, you know, weird, absurd scenarios that he's concocted and turned into, like, stand-up stories, basically. Dan Bulla joins him again. He's an SNL writer. He also worked with him on 100% Fresh, and he plays keyboard and joins in with the songs and stuff. And there's a little bit of some Safdie-level chaos that's thrown in because, as I found out from Vulture attending the premiere at New York's Paris Theater, Safdie and Sandler actually took this venue, the Nocturne Theater in California, and kind of like reshaped it and designed it to make it seem like it was a really shitty venue. Like they specifically, I guess, like took like a couple 2 liters of Coke and like dumped them on the floor and put carpet over it so that it had like a weird smell and everything. And then they like, it opens up in like a very cinematic fashion with Sandler arriving to the show and like they're kind of being a little bit of chaos because autograph seekers are there and like a bunch of people are trying to talk to him and everything before it leads into the show. And then on top of that, there are a few moments where they manufactured mishaps to happen during the show. Now, and Sandler knew things were going to happen, but he didn't know what was going to happen. And so you have these like little things that kind of make the show go wrong for a brief minute without completely derailing it or without taking away the attention from like Sandler and his comedy. So it kind of creates this feeling of like unpredictability, and it makes it feel like this jury-rigged comedy special that just kind of happened somewhere. And so it's a lot of fun. Sandler is hilarious again. Like he's doing what he does best. The one glaring issue is that Rob Schneider appears in it. He appeared in 100% Fresh, and that's fine, but he's gotten worse recently, and I'll leave it at that. And the bit that he does in the show isn't even particularly funny. I'll let you watch it yourself and see what you think, but it's just kind of a thing that's like, oh, okay, I guess Rob Schneider probably needed a paycheck and wanted to do this, I guess.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
So I have a question. Do you think Josh Safdie was just like setting Sandler up to test his improv skills or like see how he was thinking on his feet with these sort of planned moments of chaos that you're talking about?
Maybe, you know, he never really said why, at least in what I read from Vulture's, you know, little write-up they did about what they learned from the premiere Q&A afterwards. I don't know if there was like a specific reasoning other than Safdie just wanting to do something unique with the special. Because Sandler is great at improvising and like going along with the issues that happen that are, they're very mild too. It's just like little things where you wouldn't even think, oh, somebody faked this, you know, like if you don't know, you'd have no idea. And so, yeah, I mean, maybe it was him wanting to see what Sandler would do. And Sandler thought it was a fun experiment just to roll with it and see what they could do. And, you know, just exactly how, maybe how far it would go. But yeah, it's the special itself is great. And like I said, those things don't detract from the show whatsoever. So.
Okay, Adam Sandler Love You is streaming on Netflix right now, and then you watched one more thing, right?
I did. I watched Strange Darling, which is a movie that has been getting some buzz, at least in film Twitter circles, since it was recently released. Have you heard about Strange Darling? Have you seen Strange Darling, Ben?
I have, yes. BJ and I did an episode about it where she interviewed Willa Fitzgerald, the star, and JT Molnar, the director, and we tried to have a spoiler-free conversation about it because this movie is... it's fair to say it's a little twisty and it sort of plays with your expectations. So
yes, 100%. And I won't spoil it either. But yeah, that's exactly what I like about this movie. From the narrative structure to the, what you expect from a movie like this, what you assume, what's going to happen and how things are going to happen. Willa Fitzgerald is incredible in this movie. Kyle Gallner also proves that he's really got this great like niche area of being like the just like a kind of a chameleon everyman who fits into these weird dark kind of movies. I really really dug this movie a lot. It was just very unsettling and unpredictable and just a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, Strange Darling, I think, is still in theaters. It's a pretty small movie, so I imagine it'll be available on VOD at some point pretty soon. But
yeah, they're making a big push because it was shot on 35mm, and there are some actual theaters that like are playing it in 35mm. So
yeah, did you clock that Giovanni Ribisi was the cinematographer?
No, I didn't see that actually. Wow, no shit.
Yeah, I guess he'd been shooting like some commercials and he's done shorts and stuff like that. But he was a producer on this movie and the cinematographer, and this is his first time shooting a feature. So yeah, I was very impressed by that. So,
okay.
Yeah, all right. Well, let's get into the last section here. What we've been eating. What have you been eating recently, Brett?
All right. So just to let everybody know, in case some people don't know or whatever, I run my own little side Instagram called Brad's Junk, where I talk about new junk food and fast food and soft drinks and whatnot. And so here's some of the things I have tried and I've been posting about. And you can keep up with my Instagram at Look at Brad's Junk if you want to know more. There's a new Ghost Toast Kit Kat out there. Do you know what Ghost Toast is?
I don't think I've heard of it unless you told me like a year or two ago and I've completely forgotten.
I haven't, because it's a whole new thing, and Ghost Toast really didn't exist before. It's just a Halloween spooky way of talking about cinnamon toast as a flavor. and so, yeah, Kit Kat has a new Ghost Toast cinnamon toast flavored Kit Kat that's out. It is orange in color, and it's the cream / chocolate on the outside of it that is flavored like cinnamon toast. And I expected this one to taste like their previously released churro flavor, but it does have a distinct difference because I feel like it has a little bit more of a buttery flavor to it that really hones in on that toast aspect of cinnamon toast. So I really enjoyed it, actually. It's pretty good. You should be able to find it with all the Halloween candy right now. It comes in the regular candy bar size and the little snack size packs that you get for like trick or treat and stuff. So
okay, Ghost Toast Kit Kat. All right,
I got a couple Fruit Loops items. People are crazy for Fruit Loops. I don't know if you know this, but there's like riots for Fruit Loops.
I had no idea. I've not heard this at all.
You got to keep up with the news, Ben. It's a big deal. So there's Fruit Loops Rainbow Sherbet Scoops as a cereal that's out there. And in the past couple of years, there's been, I don't want to call it a trend, but it's been like a new thing that's emerged in a couple different cereals that it has a cooling effect, where like after you eat several spoonfuls of it, like you kind of get this cooling effect in your mouth, almost as if you've had like a shot of Rumplemans, I guess you could say.
That
probably like is the best way to like talk about what the experience inside your mouth feels like. But they did this with an Elf on the Shelf cereal, either last year or the year before, where it was like a chocolate mint flavored cereal, and it had a cooling effect in your mouth as well. And these sherbet, this Rainbow Sherbet Scoop cereal from Fruit Loops has the same thing. And at first it's very subtle, but as you eat more, the cooling effect becomes a little more, intense. It's not overwhelming, but it's just a kind of an interesting, experience. Unfortunately, I wasn't impressed by the flavor itself. I feel like it could have been stronger, and it's not quite as good as regular Fruit Loops, so that's a bit of a bummer. Mm. But, you know, you win some, you lose some.
Okay.
And then there's also Thomas, people who make English muffins and bagels and stuff. They have Fruit Loops-flavored mini bagels that have, like, little tiny chunks of Fruit Loops in them that give them a Fruit Loops odor and flavor. And this one, the cereal flavor isn't, like, overwhelming or anything like that. It kind of just adds just, like, a little bit of a fruity kick to it. They're really good with like fruity flavored cream cheese. Like I have pineapple cream cheese and strawberry cream cheese that I like putting on bagels and stuff, and so I put those on here, and they're specifically good with that. So keep an eye out for those.
I guess it could be worse. I guess it could be bagel flavored Fruit Loops. So
oh, you mean you Cheerios?
Oh yeah, damn, that's true. I never thought about that. Oh yeah, that's a great point. Okay, so what's the last thing here?
The last thing here, this is for all you Beetlejuice fans out there. There's a product tie-in with Fanta, where they have a new haunted apple soda that's out there, specifically branded with the Beetlejuice stripes. And some of the other Fanta flavors out there have cans with the characters on them, played by Jenna Ortega and Catherine O'Hara and whatnot. And so this is, it's a green apple flavored soda that's perfect for the Halloween season. And if you like Jolly Ranchers, sour apple Jolly Ranchers, you're going to love this soda. The soda itself isn't sour, but it has that same kind of apple flavor. And since it's Fanta and it's not zero sugar, it is pretty sweet. As I've been getting more into just drinking zero sugar soda instead of full sugar soda, like you really start to notice how sugary regular sodas are. And it's kind of off-putting after you have a couple sips. And you're like, I'm good now. But the flavor itself is very good. So, and similarly, there's also at least one unique Beetlejuice flavor of soda at Coke Freestyle machines that's at various movie theaters right now. I think it's called Haunted Fizz or something like that. And it's like a grape strawberry flavor. And that's pretty good.
I think we've talked about those Freestyle machines before, but if you're at a movie theater, if you're at a restaurant that has one of those, what's your go-to drink when you have whatever it is, 40 options or something at a Freestyle thing?
So it depends because I don't typically like the Freestyle machine, and I think that like it ruins a lot of the flavors that you have, even if you try and rinse it with water before you start using it.
Yeah.
I think that most of the brown sodas that you get out of Freestyle machines are probably the better ones, and the fruity ones aren't quite as good as they should be if you were to get them from like a normal fountain and not a Freestyle machine.
Mm-hmm.
But occasionally they do have interesting, unique flavor mixes that do work out because of the flavor combo. So I kind of change it up. The only one I think that I reliably go with is I usually get the peace tea, the peach zero sugar peace tea.
Okay.
Just because sometimes having that big of a pop is also just the carbonation just gets to me. And
yeah.
I usually go that route if I'm getting something from the Freestyle machine. So, but I also, okay, I also like getting ices when I go to the theater. So,
oh yeah, man, it's been a long time since I've had one of those. I need to fire that back up right as summer's coming to an end here. Maybe I can squeeze one last one in.
There you go.
All right. I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about a lot of the stuff that we talked about, including Brad's Instagram account. I'll link to that in the show notes. You can find a lot of the stuff at slashfilm.com, and I will link to a few other things in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi there, my name's Aaron Matek.
And I'm Katie Halper.
And we are Useful Idiots, the irreverent politics podcast calling out corporate politicians and their media stenographers.
Here, no one is safe from our ridicule. A wise journalist once said that all news can fit into the four basic food groups of news.
The four food groups are Democrats suck, Republicans suck, isn't that weird, and isn't that terrible. Each week, we deep dive on one news story from each category, covering the 2024 election, America's endless proxy wars, and so much more.
Plus, we host weekly interviews with politicians, journalists, writers, rock stars, comedians, and more.
Past guests include Noam Chomsky, Roger Waters, Abby Martin, Noor Erekat, Oliver Stone, Bernie Sanders, and David Cross.
So ditch corporate media and learn what's really going on in the world with Useful Idiots. New episodes drop every Friday wherever you get your podcasts.